All right, I hope y'all are ready for a marathon. That's what we're about to do, a marathon. You know, last week we did the something we've never done before. When we went through one whole chapter, well, we're going to do two whole chapters today just because of where it was in the book of John and leads up to the resurrection for next week. So what we're going to do is And I highlighted all of it in your program with the verses that go with it, because there's no way I could put all that on the screen for the sake of time or space. So that's exactly what we're doing this morning as we look at starting this day. It's referred to by you traditional folks as a Palm Sunday, and there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. And it's that last Sunday that Jesus entered into Jerusalem and all the events. But what we've been studying as we've been going through the whole book of John, some of those things have been kind of dealt with, and that's why we're going to push all this, these two chapters. We're skipping chapter 17 because that's a standalone. We'll come back and look at that. That's Jesus' high priestly prayer. But in chapters 18 and 19, what we see is, last week we saw where Jesus said, listen, y'all need to get ready. This is what's going to happen. I'm going to leave. The Comforter is going to come, and I don't want you to be surprised. You need to know this. So now, in chapter 18, verse 1, it starts out, and it says, and after Jesus spoke those things, and that's everything that we've looked at prior, way on back up to chapter 13, Jesus, it says that he took his disciples, and he went across the Kidron Valley, and he goes into the Garden of Gethsemane. And there it is, where we already have seen where he's foretold. This is like on Thursday night, where he's had the Lord's Supper, or what we call the Lord's Supper, but the Passover with his disciples, and Judas has gone and left the group, and now he's talking with them, and now he's about to leave, and he's going with them to the Garden of Gethsemane. So that is the backdrop of what is happening in chapter 18. But the main thing is, you know, a lot of people get hung up on, why is it that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are all different? How they, you know, the first three, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, are called the Synoptic Gospels, and then John, he records things they didn't in a way they didn't, and some people try to get hung up about that. There's really no reason for that. Why? They're seeing some things different. And his main theme that he wants to pronounce in his writing is, Jesus is in control. That's what you see. That's what he's been doing through the whole book of John, and it's no different here. So he tells us things the other guys didn't, and he leaves out things that the other guys tell us. When I say guys, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And that's exactly what he's doing. So looking at it from that frame, it explains some of the things that we'll look at. And this is what he's trying to portray. He's obedient, and that's what Jesus said, right? He says, I'm going to show my devotion to the Father because I'm going to be obedient to his will, even to the point of death. And that's exactly what he's doing. But in all of that, he's still in control. And that is the point of John's writing. Now, Jesus is arrested in the garden, chapter 18, verses 1 through 11. Remember now, he's left Jerusalem. He goes over right outside the city. He goes across the valley. If you've ever been there, it's Kidron Valley. Then he goes up the hill where Gethsemane is. And it's he's going to a olive grove with a wall around it. And that's where he's hanging out. And it was in that moment in time, when you look at the Feast of the Passover, not just the Passover day, but the whole week and everything it entailed, the Jews couldn't really go beyond, basically, they didn't want them outside the city limits for the whole week. So he could go, and his disciples could go as far as Gethsemane and not cross that boundary. So that's where they stayed. That's where they were. Judas knew that. He'd been there before. So what he's doing is the disciples and Jesus go, and they're there, and Jesus comes and betrays him there. And that's where we pick it up. So it says, then the band and the captain and the officers of Jews took Jesus and bound him. What is that? That's a temple priest, a Jewish temple priest that would be police in the temple, and also Roman guards. That we'll see in just a moment when we go to Pilate. And it's amazing that Pilate already knew something about this fiasco before Jesus ever got in front of him. Why? He gave them authority to take Roman soldiers with them. That's exactly what was going on. So he already knows what's going on. And that's why he acts the way he does sometimes when he is really, you know, he really takes jabs at the Jews and the way he does some things that we're going to see real quick. Why? Because he knows they're trying to play him. And unfortunately, they have a card against him, and they play it. So Judas brings Jewish officials, the temple priest, and Roman soldiers, and they get Jesus, and you know the situation. Some of these things, we'll jump over them. What does Peter do? You know, he jumps up, and he takes his knife, and he's going to cut off the servant's ear. And you know, when he asks, when they walk in there, they say, where's this Jesus? And Jesus just steps up in front and said, I'm him. You know, what happened there? Some of them record, says, what? And a bunch of them fell back. You know, we don't really know what all that was about. But he says, who are you looking for? And he takes all the focus off the disciples. He says, I'm the man you're looking for. He's again protecting them, but they arrest Jesus there, the Romans and the Jewish officials. And they take him from the Garden of Gethsemane back over near the temple to the atrium or the garden or the courtyard of Annas. And who was Annas? And they led him away to Annas first. Why? For he was the father-in-law to Caiaphas, who was the high priest at the moment. And if you go back and you look at your Jewish history, you'll know that Annas was a high priest long time ago, was dethroned. Several of his own children were the high priest, and now Caiaphas, who is his son-in-law. That sounds like a conflict of interest. Wouldn't you think? Isn't that what we call that? When someone on the inside's partner gets this bit over them, we say, well, wait a minute, that don't sound right. What this means is Annas is calling the shots. Oh, he doesn't have the official title, and that's why he's got to get Caiaphas to sign off on him. Why? Because Rome recognizes the high priest, but they don't recognize Annas because he's not in the slot anymore. So he's getting, and it's amazing, they take him to him first. Why would they do that? Because he's the one going to make the decision. That's exactly what it is. For he was father-in-law to Caiaphas, which was the high priest at that moment. And the Jews, you can go back and you can look at the, a lot of people try to argue this, that it's not true, but it's even in the Mishnah in AD 200, the fact that the the Jewish Sanhedrin officials could not pronounce death on anyone. They had to give just cause, and then Rome would have to authenticate it. They had to approve it. So that's why they're getting Caiaphas to take it to Pilate, because they couldn't kill Jesus on their own. And that's exactly the way it worked. So this is what they're playing. So Annas brings him. And if you look at it, you go back. They brought him to first him and then to Caiaphas because he was a priest. You know, it's kind of interesting. Even when you go to the next step, where Peter was. Where was Peter? I believe it was John that goes along and Peter is following. But where did they take them? It says it takes him to a place where there's a fire. And where is that? They're taking him to Annas' courtyard or his atrium that's close to the temple, but it's not the temple area. Why? Because what does it say? Who is it that recognizes Peter? Remember one of them? That said, who was it? A lady. She couldn't operate in the temple place. So this young girl sees Peter with John and says, wait a minute, you came in with him and he knows him. Does that mean you know him too? And then Peter said, oh, no, I don't know him. So they're taking him into, and by the way, the high priest Annas was very, very extremely rich. So it's all tied. So they're taking him here first. Number one, it's illegal to have a trial at night, absolutely. And so that's exactly what they're doing. It's after dark on Thursday. They go and get him, and they have to get him through the system and get him to Pilate before Pilate leaves work in the morning at 10 o'clock. Because it's kind of, the Roman guys, they went to work early and they quit at 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. Some of you work like that, don't you? No. You don't go to work to 10 o'clock. I'm sorry. That's not right. No, I'm joking. So in this situation where Peter follows along, so it's not in the temple, it's connected to the temple. Why? Because Peter could never get into the temple. You know, he would not be able to do that, and that lady wouldn't be there either. So that's a definitive, and it says what? And there was a fire where he warmed himself, and the servants and the officers stood there who had made a fire of coals. That was abnormal to have a fire burning all night, especially at the time of the Passover, because if no one's out there warming by the fire, they didn't have one. They didn't just keep them burning at night. So what's going on? Something's going on that's abnormal, which is they're having a trial that's not supposed to be going on at night, number one. So they have it going, made out of charcoal. And Peter's out there warming when that girl says, wait a minute, I know you were that group. And he starts backing up. And all this is a sham. All this is going on, warming by the fire, within the temple complex, or connected to it, but not in the temple itself. And his view is like his courtyard, because he's a rich dude. You know, he's not poor. And that's exactly what's happening. So what Annas interrogates Jesus first, and you remember what goes on in that situation, right? You remember how he talks to him? What does he ask him? And the high priest then asked Jesus, number one, if you go and you look at the way the proceedings are supposed to go, they were never supposed to interrogate the person on trial. It was witnesses. Kind of funny where Jesus calls his hand on this. And he asked him, the high priest says, what have you been teaching? What is it? You know, what is it you've been teaching? And what did Jesus say? Well, I've never done it in private. You ask any, look what Jesus is saying. You can go ask, you're supposed to be asking them to start with. You can go out there and ask anyone because I've been preaching out in the public and everybody knows what I've been teaching. It hasn't been done in secret. So he calls him on the carpet right there. You're doing something very, very legal right here. You're supposed to interrogate them first, not me. So automatically, and sometimes we kind of look over that and say, what? Yeah, this is really a sham. I mean, really a sham. In a formal Jewish hearing, what? They would always interview people who were witnesses first, not the person that's on trial. And that's exactly what Annas is doing. And so when Jesus says, he asks him, he says, why are you asking me? You don't need to ask me. You need to go out there and ask those witnesses. And it was such a conviction. What did one of the high officials do? Y'all remember? I didn't put it in there. What did he do? He slaps Jesus. What do you mean insulting this high priest? And why? Because he called his hand. He said, what are you asking me for? You're not even supposed to be asking me. You're supposed to be out there asking them. And that's exactly how they retaliated. Why? Because, you know, it's amazing how when you do something wrong and somebody confronts you when you don't like it, how you respond. What do? You kind of lash back, right? That's exactly what's going on. He challenges and it reveals something is not right here. And Jesus knows it without question. And he's offended the high priest, and that's why the guy hits him. And he recognizes quickly, he said, well, this guy ain't going to give me anything. You know, they've already decided he has to die. We saw that starting back in chapter 13, you know, where they said they're going to kill him. And Jesus said, you know, my time's not now, so he got away. And now Jesus is in control still, and now the time is right, and he's there. He understands he's not going to get anywhere with this thing. So he says, well, I'm just going to go ahead and pass him off to Caiaphas because he's got to sign off on this thing, right? Y'all know what that means? You know, even though they're not the boss, they call the shots. You ever had been in one of those situations? It happens quite often sometimes where a preacher who's been in a church for 50 years stays in that church, and then a new preacher comes. Guess who runs the church? Not the new preacher. Otis runs the church. Otis runs it from the back seat, but he runs the church. Why? Because before anything's done, they always go ask Otis. That's exactly what's going on, and he knows it. Why would they send him Annas first? He said, this ain't going to work, so we're going to get him on to Caiaphas, and then Caiaphas will get him on to Pilate and recommend that we kill this guy because he's blaspheming. He called himself God. So they get him to Jesus because what? Legally, Caiaphas has to recommend it. Pilate signs off of it, and we got it. The plan's already there. Annas, they already have it. So what do? They take him and they leave there and they go up to where Pilate is. And it says what? They led him there from Jesus, from Caiaphas to the Hall of Judgment where Pilate was. And he had to come into town, by the way, on the big events like this because his normal place was Caesarea. But in case of mob violence or somewhere, because he was the Roman authority, he had a place in Jerusalem there where he had to stay when all this was happening. And so they took him to that headquarters. That's where they took him. And it was early. Why? It was normal that the Roman authorities would start early in the morning, get all their jobs done by 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock, and they're done for today. They even, you know, whenever Jesus told Peter, you know, before the cock crows, you're going to do this? Sometimes we think, well, that just means daylight because that's when the rooster crows. Not exactly. The Romans, a way of dealing with time from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m., guess what it was referred as? The cock crow. Jesus knows all that. He's in control. So they said, we got to get him to Pilate before 6 a.m. because we got to get this done with before he leaves. He's have to sign off on this death. Why? We got to get all this before dark tonight. This is Good Friday, okay? We got to get all this done before dark tonight because that's got to be done before then. So that's why they're doing it at night and in their hurry and they're getting in there. But look at this. And it was early and they themselves went not into the judgment hall. What? Because they might eat the Passover. you know, the Jews couldn't go into a Gentile place. It would be contaminating to them. And if they wanted to partake in any of the Passover events of the whole week, they had to stay clean. And if they were if they were considered dirty, then they had to go through the ritual process of cleaning, and that would kick them out of the Passover celebration so they wouldn't go in. Oh, no. You know, it's kind of like the guy saying, we're here to have him killed, but we can't go in there because we'll be defiled. It's like some of the religious people saying, you know, we don't drink beer, but we make it. Isn't that right? Oh, no, no. We believe it's wrong to drink it, but we're going to make it. We believe it's wrong for us as Gentiles to step in here, but we want this guy killed even though we don't have a good reason for it. Figure that one out. That's the way we are, though, right? John reports four more details about the trial before Pilate. How is it? Some of them say, well, he can't know this. It doesn't really take much to understand that. If John wasn't in there, what about this? What if Jesus, after seeing his disciples after he had risen from the dead, how much time did he spend with them? Pretty good bit of time. Couldn't he have told them what happened? Couldn't a witness been in the place, been saved later, and said, this is what I heard when I was there? Matter of fact, somebody could have been interested enough to go look at the Roman court system and read the proceedings. Imagine that. So it's not strange that John could repeat something or tell something that the rest of them didn't do, but that's exactly what happens. But why? The dominant theme for John is that Jesus is in control of this thing, even the trial. He's in control. They brought him there. They refused to go in. So Pilate steps out to the door. He doesn't go in yet because they will not go in. So he steps out, and he starts to talk to them, and look what he says. When he steps outside, he says, what's the charges against this guy? Outside. They're not inside yet. They're outside. And basically, that's where the proceedings start, where Jesus is on trial. He said, what's the deal? What's the deal here? So, and they say, if you go back and you read what they say, and then Jesus is, Pilate takes him inside. The very fact that the Roman troops were there at the arrest, what does this tell you? This thing's not clean. It's already, they've been to Pilate already, had some Roman soldiers go with Judas. Now they're there back there again. All of this tells you what? Man, this is bogus. And Jesus knows that, but he says, I'm in control. Proves that the Jewish authorities communicated something of this to Pilate in advance. Now, if you can remember, Pilate hated the Jews, and the Jews hated Pilate. How do you think that works? Both of them are trying to do anything they can to get at the other one. The Jews are going to try to manipulate Pilate. He has to sign off on it. He knows that. So every time you see him respond to them, just like he says, here's your king, king of the Jews, what is he doing? He's jabbing. Why? Because he doesn't like them at all. And the only way they finally get their way is they're going to blackmail him to someone over him, and he's scared for his position, so he caves. That's exactly what's going on. The authorities had to secure a guilty verdict from Pilate if Jesus is going to be killed. So they had to persuade Pilate to find him as guilty. So when he asked him, he says, what has he done? And now, Pilate takes Jesus inside. The authorities, the Jews, are out of the picture. Now Jesus is just in there with Pilate himself. And Pilate entered to the judgment hall again and called Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? That's what they said. You know, they said he's a king, and he's a threat to Caesar and a threat to Rome. And they're trying to make it political, even though it's really just theological for them. They're trying to make it political because they know that Pilate's not going to buy into it if it's only theological, if only just God-centered. So he begins his interrogation of Jesus, and he said, are you the king of the Jews? And what happens next is things turn around. Jesus becomes the interrogator, and now Jesus is the judge. You remember what he says to them? He said, Pilate, did you decide this on your own conviction, or are you just buying the theme from the Jews that brought me here? Guess what? Pilate didn't like that at all. You know why? Because Jesus is showing him who he is. Isn't that something? You don't ever need to borrow your convictions from someone else. You don't borrow my convictions. You don't borrow anybody else's convictions. You are convicted because God's word tells you something, and that's why you need to do something. You don't just do something because someone else does something. That's exactly what he's asking him. He says, listen, why? And Jesus is starting to get into him. He said, wait a minute. Are you starting to think about this? You're starting to wonder about really who I am and all that's involved here, or are you just playing off of them? And I think it's kind of getting into Pilate. So what does he do? Well, who am I, a Jew? That was not a positive statement for him. He said, who do you think I am? And this is how I responded. He said, do you think anything to do with this means anything to me personally? Man, I saw this. We were going across the Sea of Galilee, and that boat that was supposed to be like Jesus was in, but this one was better than that boat. And a whole bunch of us, and our guide, who was a Jewish guy by the name of Ezra, was his name. And we were all standing back there talking and talking about Jesus, and man, you know, he knows so much stuff. And so I just asked him, personally, wasn't obnoxious or anything. I said, what is all, because he knows so much stuff. You know, he just knew so much about Jesus. I said, how does all this affect you? He said, oh, it's just history to me. All this stuff about Jesus, all these facts that he knows and believes that they're true, and you know, all these things. I said, but how does that affect you? He said, it doesn't affect me at all. It's just history. That's what he's saying. He said, it doesn't mean anything to me. Do you think for one minute that I'm going to stand up here and listen to you because you think whatever happens here has some kind of meaning on bearing on me? Not at all. You know, a lot of people take that approach with the gospel and Jesus, but guess what? It does have a bearing on you because one day you're going to stand in front of Jesus and he's going to be the judge. And we say, oh, no, that's exactly what he's saying. Oh, I don't care. This is just part of it. Jesus confirms his kingship and he says, you said that I'm a king. Remember that verse? It says, for this end was I born. And he goes on to explain. He says, but my kingdom is not of this world. Jesus couldn't just say yes. There was too much involved in that. So he had to go and he said, oh yeah, I am a king, but my kingdom is not of this world. And he goes on and he finishes that verse. By the way, Apollos thinking, if my kingdom is this world, what, I'd have healed your servant's ear that Peter cut off? And Pilate clearly sees, oh, he's not a threat to Rome. Oh, this is bogus. And that's why he backs up. And you remember the confrontation there where Pilate goes back and they said, we want Barabbas. Who was Barabbas? He was an absolute threat to Rome. Why? Because he'd been leading a rebellion against her, try to overthrow Rome. Showed you the integrity Pilate did not have. So what happens? Jesus is beaten the first time. The first time, yeah, he's beaten twice. Then Pilate therefore took Jesus when he saw that the Jews were not going to take. Remember what he says? He says, well, wait a minute. You brought him here for me to judge, and I say he's not guilty, and you're not going to be satisfied with that. Take him and judge him according to your own law. Right? You know what he says in there? Then Pilate therefore took Jesus and said, well, I'll just punish him, and then they'll be satisfied, and they'll let him go. Basically, that's what he's saying. So he went and had him scourged. There were three different modes of scourge by the Romans. There were three levels. There was a light one where if you have a misdemeanor, they beat you, but it's not horrible. And then the next one is it intensifies. You get more and more. And then the last one would have been the one that Jesus got last when they beat him within an inch of his life. That would be the last one. So this was a light beating. Remember, kind of like they did John and them. They took him and they beat him and said, don't preach in the name of Jesus anymore. Sort of like that. You know, it's kind of a light whipping. And he says, I'm going to beat him and I'm going to take him back out to him. So he steps out there and he, after Jesus is beaten, and addresses the Jews, and he says, I don't find anything wrong with him. Then dramatically presents Jesus. Look at this guy. You say he's a threat. My goodness, he's beaten. He's weak. And he's not a threat to anyone. But they were not satisfied. No. But for them, that was not enough. We want to kill him. This is not the first time we've seen this. If you've been going through this with us and John, how many times have they already tried to kill him? Jesus says he slipped away in the crowd. He got away because his time wasn't right. He said, so what does this say? He's in control. Even though a lot of people try to fuss at us, if we say the Jews killed him, they say, oh, that's anti-Semitic. No, it's not. It's a fact. They killed him. I mean, they were the ones responsible. Did God orchestrate all that? You know, here's the way that works. God knows what every person is going to do, and he's not going to make you do anything. But when he knows exactly what you're going to do, he orchestrates what he knows you're going to do to get his will fulfilled. It's called the sovereignty of God and responsibility of man. People try to say, oh, well, you can't put those two together. Absolutely you can. And that's exactly what's going on. They said, no, you got to kill him. And in that process, they said he's the Son of God. Isn't that right? What happened then? Pilate's ears perked up. He was not religious, but superstitious? Oh, my heavens. Just go back and read some of the history of what these guys did. Why? Because they were superstitious. I'm talking about worse than my grandmama. You know, my grandmama, her generation, they were bad superstitious. You know, like you can't put your foot on a rocking chair and rock it if no one's standing in or sitting in it. You ever heard that one? Can't throw a hat on the bed. Can't whistle at the table. I mean, just name it. All kind of stuff. Why? Something bad's going to happen if you do. That's where these guys were. Why? Because that's why he takes him in a second time and asks him. When they said, automatically he's thinking, wait a minute. If he's really that, he could have something that I don't know about, so he's threatened. So that's exactly what he does. So he goes in again into the judgment hall, and he says to Jesus, now, where is it you're from? He's thinking, these guys say you're the Son of God. Where is it you're from? You see what he's doing? He said, what's going on here? Where are you from? But Jesus gave him no answer. You know, sometimes that's the thing to do. Some stuff is so nonsensical, you better off just let the thing go. You just need to learn that, right? It's called casting your pearls before swine is what the Bible states it a little bit later, right? That's not even worth an answer. So Jesus doesn't answer. You remember what he says? He says, after Jesus didn't answer him, Pilate, in his egotistical authority, he says, don't you know who I am? I have the power to what? I can free you or execute you. And what does Jesus say? He says, what? You could have no power at all except that what God gives you. Is God in control? Yes, he is. Does he make Pilate make this decision? No, he doesn't. Does he make Judas make that decision? No, he doesn't. But guess what? It's called compatibilism. It means what? God in his sovereignty knows everything? Absolutely. And he does what? He knows you. And he knows me. And he works through even our bad. Do you think he told the Jews to kill Jesus? Absolutely not. You know, I've heard people in the past say, when you look at some of the things that have happened to us, oh, well, God meant that way. No, he doesn't. God doesn't mean for anyone to lie and be slanderous. That is not what God does. He would be the author of evil if he did that, right? That's not the way that works. Jesus said, you can have no power at all against me except that we're given you from above. Therefore, he that delivered me to you is a greater sin. So it really, is Pilate responsible? Yes, he is. Is God going to hold accountable? Yes, he is. Is Caiaphas responsible? Yes, he is. All of those guys, whoever started this thing is going to have the greater sin, but they're all guilty. It doesn't really matter how we justify our sin. We still have to account for our sin. You might try, well, I did this because Otis did that or she did that. Well, it doesn't matter. They're going to get punishment, but you are too, unless something's done about it. That's exactly what's going on. So Jesus' sentence, then it says what? He delivered him, therefore, to them to be crucified, and they took Jesus and they led him away. And it fills in the gaps in other places. What happens? Then they take him. The soldiers prepare him for a crucifixion. They take him, and they beat him. Within an inch of his life, they put his cross on him to carry it. You know, John leaves out that Simon of Cyrene, that he's not the one carrying the cross. And part of the reason is because it doesn't really push the point that John's trying to push, and that Jesus is in control of it all. So he doesn't mention that. It's not a fact. By the way, you know, a lot of you Muslims think that Simon died for Jesus, and Jesus never did die. That Simon took his place on the cross, which is heretical, absolutely. Then they delivered him there, and they took him to be crucified. And you know exactly what the Roman crucifixion was. You can see it in black and white. This step, all the things they did, and they got him ready, and they led him down to where he would be crucified. And he, bearing his cross, went forth into a place, the place of the skull, which is called Golgotha. So he has to carry his own cross. That was part of their crucifixion process. Why? Humiliation. Everyone sees, especially the people who were convicted of sedition, which would be against Rome. You know, they want to make sure everyone understands. You do this against Rome, and this is what happens to you. And guess what? They didn't anyone get off. The soldiers administered this scourging, the one we're really most familiar with, where he's beaten almost, what did Isaiah say? Beaten almost beyond what? Recognition. Beat him so bad you couldn't recognize him. You know, it was not a pretty little thing. It was even a lot worse than the betrayal a few years ago by the Passion of Christ. You know, they did a pretty good job, but it was worse than even that. So what happens? They handed him over his, they took him to the place, and you know what they did, right? They made him carry his cross, and it was like they went to the I-75 of Jerusalem, where everyone walked, the main thoroughfare where everyone would see, if you do this to Rome, this is what happens to you. And they put him out there on a cross, and it's not 15 foot off the ground. It's close enough where you could touch his feet. And there they said the Romans, anyone who was convicted of sedition, you couldn't take their body off the cross. The vultures ate it. We want everybody to understand. That's why they put the plaque over. It says, you know, this is what he's guilty of. We want everyone to know. You can't do this against Rome. Remember, this is one of those jabs Pilate did. What did he write over Jesus? What was on his card? The what? The what of the Jews? Oh, boy, did that make them mad? Oh, no, no. You got to change it. You got to say, he said I was. And Pilate's jabbing. He said, what I've written, I've written. He knows they hated that. Why? He understands the whole situation. But what happens? The whole reason he caves is, remember, he comes back two times and says, I don't find any fault in him. You need to let him go. Remember what they used as a blackmail? If you do this, you're no who? Friend of Caesar. You know, that was actually a, what you call it? Not just a place. It was a title of a position. Friend of Caesar. And it turned into something pretty negative. So whenever he hears this, because the last guys before him that had that title, they killed him. It wasn't positive. So whenever the Jews start saying, if you do this, you're showing that you're not a friend of Caesar, and he already knows because he's himself this way, how many people did the Caesars kill in their own family to keep them from taking their slot? You're talking about a black group. And he knows that. So he's afraid now that if he doesn't stand up for Jesus, they're going to report him already. And already Caesar has had a lot of words from the Jews because he hated the Jews, because Pilate hated the Jews and the Jews hated him, and they were already having trouble. And if one more thing comes from this area to his superiors, they're going to get him. So he folds. Remember what he does? He tries to wash his hands from it. He died a suicide in exile. Why? Because of the very things that he should have stood for, he let go. That's exactly what happens. So they took him because he caved, and they killed him by a Roman execution, put him out there on the cross to die and to be eaten by the vultures. But that's not the way it ends. Why? Whenever they come, and after this, Joseph of Arimathea. We haven't heard of him before. Very, very rich dude, by the way, has his own cemetery. If you have your own cemetery, then you're pretty rich, right? And he comes up, and being a disciple of Jesus, but secretly for the fear of the Jews, before no one knew because he was afraid what they would do to him, sought Pilate. Not just anyone gets into Pilate. Okay? You got to know someone. Isn't it right? And who you are is who you know. Isn't that what it goes? What does that mean? He was a guy of influence. So he has the ability to go to Pilate that he might get the body of Jesus, take it off the cross so that the vultures don't need it. Jesus dies quickly. They don't break his bones. Why? Because it says in Isaiah as well, not a bone of his body would be broken. Why did they got to get him off? They got to get him all off the cross before sundown on Friday. Why? Because the Sabbath is tomorrow. So the guards go out there to break their legs so they can't push up, so they'll go ahead and suffocate. And Jesus is already dead. And he goes there and he gets the body. So he and Nicodemus go and they take, it says what, 75 pounds of ointment? It's a powder form. They would put it in strips, and they would roll it around the body in little strips. And all it was to keep the smell down because they didn't embalm people. And he says what? That he had a garden tomb near where they were. The guys didn't have much time. God in his sovereign is orchestrating all of these things. God's in control of this thing. He told us even back in Genesis chapter 3, right? What did he say? Oh, yeah. You're going to hurt his heel, but he's going to do what? He's going to crush your head. This is not a brand new idea. But now it's unfolding. Joseph of Arimathea was a rich member of the Sanhedrin of all things and has connections. So he goes to Pilate, gets Jesus, and they bury him. So he wouldn't stay there. And John records all of these events. of this last few hours. What? For the purpose of showing us simply, Jesus is in control of this. You're not going to take my life. I'm laying it down. You know, isn't that amazing? That's how salvation works. God doesn't make you do one thing. You have to make a choice to submit to His will, even if it costs you everything that you think is worth something in this life. That's what that means. That's what John's showing. He said, you want an example of what obedience is? Jesus just showed it to you. Do you want an example of what it means to be in control? Jesus just showed it to you. So what does that mean for us? It means this. It's the very same thing, that we do not have to worry. God has always been in control, is in control, and will be in control when all this mess that we're in now is over. That's the point that John's trying to make, that we don't have to worry, that Jesus, through all of this, is still calling all the shots. I hope that this week, starting today, that you could sit down somewhere. You can take this little handout. You don't have to. And just go back and read those things and read all the verses in between and just see everything that Jesus went through from a physical thing just to pay the price for our sin. So what? So that not only in this life right now, when the government's falling apart and everything else, we can still have a peace as He's in control. But when this life is over, and then we stand at that gash in the earth we call a grave, when we stand there, that we don't have to worry. Why? Because Jesus is in control of the whole thing. That's what this helps us understand. Let's pray. Lord, we just thank You for loving us, that You have a plan that works. You have a plan to restore us to Yourself. You paid all the prices. You secured everything that's necessary. And You're reminding us through Your death and burial, and as we see Your resurrection, that this thing is not over. It's just a brand new beginning. Father, use all of the verses and the idea of this week to convict each one of us, to examine where are we really in our relationship with You. Are we like Pilate and it really doesn't mean anything? It's just something we're going through? Or do we understand how important it is, not only in this life but in eternity, of what You've done and are doing for us? In Jesus' name, amen.